This is Max Q, the podcast by Peabody's Launchpad office dedicated to demystifying what life is like after graduation. Every episode, we sit down with a recent Peabody alum to get their take on what life is like for working artists in today's world. Multifaceted careers, time management, finances, finding balance between your life and your work. We explore that and more on the Max Q podcast. Rob McGinnis here. This week, I'm speaking with cellist Olivia Rainoff, a 2020 Peabody graduate. After graduation, she moved to New York and now works for Death of Classical, a Harlem-based classical music organization focused on creating site-specific concerts that feature underrepresented composers and performers. Hi, Olivia. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited to learn a little bit more about the work you're doing right now. I was wondering if you could start off by introducing yourself a little bit and maybe talking about what you're doing in your professional life and in your personal life right now.
Yeah, absolutely. First, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I am currently working as artistic administrator for an organization called Death of Classical, based in Brooklyn, New York. We do a lot of sort of art out of place kind of things, which is something that I'm really excited to talk about and share. I recently graduated from Peabody this past spring with my master's in cello performance. Given the global pandemic that we're surrounded by, my life is a little bit up in the air right now, as I think is the case for most people. But I'm fortunate enough to be healthy and safe and in a situation where I can still do what I love, and I'm able to work, which I'm really grateful for.
I'm curious about how did this job come about? I mean, it feels like, do you have connections in Brooklyn already? What was kind of the process for getting working with Death by Classical?
So it's an interesting story. I moved home in March, just after spring break.
And home is Brooklyn, I'm guessing?
Home is actually upstate New York in a little town called Tuxedo, about an hour north of New York City. So just close enough to be there when I want to, and just far enough to feel like I'm disconnected in a way when I need to be. Anyway, when I moved home, sort of before graduation, but as the pandemic was kicking up and everything was becoming more and more uncertain, I started just applying for any job that I could find. I think over the course of the last 8 months, I probably applied for 75 to 100 different jobs, some with organizations that I knew, some that I had absolutely never heard of, and LinkedIn just popped up in my email and said, hey, this might work for you. Of the 75 to 100 that I applied for, I think this was the only one that I knew I definitely wanted to pursue. Throughout my education and my sort of journey as an artist, I've always been looking for something new and different. And I've always had this drive to do something outside of the box. But I feel like I'm constantly, especially in academic settings, being told, not that I can't do that, but that there will be so many obstacles along the way that it's pretty much impractical to even try and do something that no one else is doing, or something new and different that hasn't been done before. And that's always really bothered me. So when I saw Death of Classical's job listing for an artistic administrator, I was immediately struck, of course, by the name, which I think is a great play on, you know, the phrase that classical music is dying, which we're taught, but simultaneously taught is not true. But anyway, I was really intrigued that there was an organization out there that was doing something that was new and different and outside of the box, and doing all of these things that I had forever been told you can't do and you won't be successful at within the realm of classical music. So I applied in early April. Their job application wasn't due until the end of August, but I applied as soon as I could, and I promptly followed up and said, hi, I really want to work for you. Can I intern? Can I do any work over the summer? Is there anything that I can do to be a part of this? Because it's exactly what I want to do. And just due to the nature of the organization, there wasn't much going on. There was also a global pandemic, small things that sort of got in the way of programming. But I finally got through some interview rounds and had a handful of conversations with the artistic director, and finally I was hired, and it feels like a weight has been lifted off my shoulders, and now I can look at all the teachers that have always told me you can't do this and say, aha, I am. I'm doing exactly what you told me that I couldn't do. So that's sort of the progression of getting this position. And every single day, it's just thrilling to encounter new things that I'm doing that I've been told are impossible and impractical.
Can you, I'm really interested in this idea of like what you were told was impossible or impractical. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what are some examples of things that you have been, maybe you were told specifically that you've transcended through this position?
Mm-hmm. I mean, going back pretty much as far as I can remember, whether it be from private teachers that I've had or in classes about music or in orchestral ensembles, there's always been this notion, and maybe this isn't something that a lot of other people in my situation have felt, but I've felt this sense of tradition that sort of reigns over all of us. And so, I mean, I minored in artistic administration when I was in college, and in a handful of those classes, I was encouraged to, or assigned, to come up with projects, write like mock grant proposals, just ways to brainstorm ideas of how to promote classical music or promote different art forms and create different projects that would highlight them. And I felt like I was always being told when I would turn in my assignment of, you know, I want to do this performance in this non-traditional space that has nothing to do with a concert hall, and no one's going to wear a tux or formal concert attire. It's just like a really cool experience. I was always told like, well, you know, that's a good idea, but you need to sort of narrow it down a little bit. Like, you can have all of these funky out of the box elements, but you need it to be either in a concert hall or with some sort of formal repertoire that's conventionally done. Like, there has to be an element of the tradition that reigns over all of us, sort of connecting the dots. But now I work for an organization that puts on concerts in a cemetery. I mean, To America, our most recent event and the only large scale public classical music event that happened in New York City this entire fall, was done at night, in the moonlight, in the dark, in a cemetery. And I guarantee if I were to go back to any of those classes where I was asked to create a project or come up with an idea and I said, this is what I want to do, I would have been told, it's there. There's too much that you can't control. It's too outside of the box. It won't work.
That's fascinating. So I'm curious, there's two pieces in there that I want to drill down into. So what does the day-to-day look like in this position? Because it seems like, yes, the organization itself is very non-traditional, but what are the pieces that you're helping keep running? And I am curious about, what were the things in that artistic administration training or your time at Peabody that maybe contributed or maybe didn't?
Mm-hmm. The day-to-day, it's a bit up in the air, which I actually find really refreshing. It sort of depends on what we're working on. So when we have a project or an event coming up or a performance that we're getting ready for, it's sort of an all hands on deck kind of thing. And it's a lot of coordinating logistics, which I very much recognize the importance of. And I'm grateful to all of the teachers who have taught me how to organize and coordinate logistics, because I think that's the most important part of an artistic organization. If the logistics don't get lined up, if the little things don't happen totally in sync, then it's a disaster. So it's a lot of just making sure that I anticipate any problems that can come up before they come up. There are some days when I don't have all that much going on. We're entering a very cold season where we can't really have people come to a cemetery at night and be comfortable. So we don't really have a lot of programming coming up. So we're sort of turning our focus to other things. So it's a little bit less of a high pressure position right now, but I really appreciate the flexibility and the variety within that. It feels like I can sort of roll with the tide and just do what I need to do, but then I still have time to step back and focus on other things when we don't have like a high pressure event or something that we're in the middle of planning.
I think that there is a general fear, a preconception for a lot of performers that if they have a arts admin position that they're going to give up all of their performance and all of their creativeness. And I'm curious about what your kind of reaction is to that. I mean, do you have time to practice? How do you work that into your day?
That's a really good question. With a complex answer.
Good.
So I feel that this is just for me personally. I, for as long as I can remember, have been just going full steam ahead nonstop. Throughout my undergraduate studies, throughout my graduate studies, which was all in performance, I felt like all I was doing was practicing. And I was learning and, of course, enjoying it. I loved all of it, but I was so focused on what is this audition going to do for me in 5 years? What is this music festival going to do for my resume? How is this going to set me up for a career 10 years from now? And I think I focused so much on what I was doing for the future that I stopped realizing what I was doing for myself right now. So, to answer the question, I feel like I needed a break. I very much needed a break. And I only realized that once it started to really affect me. And that happened to be around the time when I mean, we were all sent home because of the pandemic. So I'm grateful that it sort of lined up with a time when I was able to step back and stop going full steam ahead. But as an administrator, while my official title technically is artistic administrator, that never really crosses my mind unless I'm like looking at a business card that says artistic administrator or I'm on the website or something. But in the day-to-day work of what I do, I love it so much that it doesn't occur to me that maybe I'm like missing out on the performance side of things. And I think I've always had this notion, like you just said, that if I went into arts administration, I had to choose that over performance. I couldn't find a way to combine both. And I've been in administrative positions before where it definitely felt like because I had chosen that route, I was missing out on the performance and I wasn't able to do the thing that I really wanted to do. But I think working for an organization that I believe in so much and that feeds me in a way that I never anticipated it would, it doesn't feel like I'm missing out on anything because I love what I do so much. And as far as practicing goes, I have learned how to practice for myself. It has been a very difficult process of getting to that point. But for the last however many years, at least six that I've been in school, I've been constantly practicing for the next thing with no time to stop in between and recognize, do I want to be playing this? Do I want to be practicing this right now? And so being in quarantine and being at home with no real performance opportunities, as I mean, there's nothing going on. It's been a really good opportunity for me to step back and practice when I want to, because I want to, and practice what I want to. So it's sort of renewed my sense of why I love playing the cello, not for other people and not so that I can get paid for that gig for playing my part and getting through it in one piece, but I enjoy this today, here, now, regardless of what else is going on.
That's such a fantastic answer. So almost like the art has become again creative rather than just something that you
Work.
do to
It's not work
sustain.
anymore.
Right. It's not work. That's well put. So I think that this is kind of actually comes out of this question that we were just discussing, but is there a way that because you're talking about you had this way of going through practicing just to get through the gig. So is there a way in which your goals and priorities that you had maybe throughout your master's degree have changed now that you've gotten into this position and gotten to this place?
Definitely. I think more so the way that I set goals for myself has changed dramatically.
Can we talk about that? I love talking about how
Absolutely.
to set goals. Yes.
So I think that I'm in a unique position because I'm giving myself a lot more freedom than I ever have before. And it's been a constant struggle with myself of feeling like I'm not doing enough and battling sort of that balance of giving myself freedom and time off and the ability to do what I want when I want. And then on the flip side of that, feeling like, okay, well, I'm not getting anywhere. I don't have enough goals. I don't structure them well enough. I don't structure my time well enough. And so finding a balance to these different sides has been tricky. But I think that it's really important to, for me at least, it was really, really important for me to recognize why I was setting goals and how external factors were influencing the goals that I was setting.
Can you explain that a little bit more? So do you have some ideas, or can you specify what you think, the way that why has changed in the past year or
Sure.
so?
Yeah. So for a specific example, I was taking an orchestral excerpt class when I was at Peabody, and I really liked it. I learned so much, and I practiced a ton for that class. But I realized that the goals that I was setting in terms of the repertoire that I was learning and the pace at which I was forcing myself to learn them, it wasn't for me at all. It was so that by the end of the semester, I could say, this is what I did. And now I can play all these excerpts, and now I'm a cellist. And I think that's a good example of how sort of how my mind has always worked. I visualize a certain point at which I will achieve a goal rather than understanding the process that it takes to get there. And so you don't just magically poof, accomplish a goal and check it off your list one day. Maybe you do. Some people probably do. But for me at least, it takes, little bits every day over the course of a much greater period, and you gradually get closer and closer to accomplishing that goal. So I think just twisting the approach around and flipping that on its head and realizing that it's not like I'm going to do enough and then one day I'll be an expert or I'll be accomplished in a certain thing. It takes that constant work towards something to then accomplish a goal. So resetting goals has been something that I've worked on a lot in the last 8 or so months, of recognizing what's a realistic goal for me to set for myself and what's a more realistic way of getting there, not just pushing myself as hard as I can, as much as I can, as fast as I can, so that I can check it off my list.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the places where you've gained those skills, how those skills are working well for you right now, and the things that you feel like you had to kind of fix quickly once you got into this position because you realized that it wasn't quite where it needed to be. And if there are even tools or technology apps that you use to kind of help keep you on top of some of these things.
That's a good question. I attribute most of my skills within the category of organization to my mom. Both of my parents work in law, and I have been raised to have a very analytical perspective, which I'm extremely grateful for. But I make a lot of lists. That's sort of the baseline of it. I make tons of lists and I write things down. And to me, they're very, very organized. To someone else, they may not be. But keeping track of my thoughts has been something that I've always sort of been trained to do from a problem-solving perspective. So I think the biggest tool that I needed to bring into this position and that I've learned along the way is learning how to anticipate problems before they come up, learning how to read through a contract and see potential holes in it, looking at a schedule and seeing how one tiny little unexpected speed bump could completely change the whole thing.
Speaking of, finding these holes, particularly in finding holes in plans or schedules for things, is a particularly useful and broad example. Like how do you identify when you're looking through a schedule for, say, one of these events that you've put together for the group? Or it could even be something smaller and more specific than that. Is there something that you do as a kind of process to go through and check and make sure that the flow is going to work well?
Yeah, I always read things out loud, which to me is very, very helpful. Even if there's no one else in the room, or even if there is someone else in the room, I will read things out loud and try and visualize moving from one place to the next and how it's all going to work out. I think that it's a skill that comes with experience. I also learn by experience. I learn by doing and by making mistakes, more importantly. The anxiety that I feel when I have made a schedule and I'm in the middle of that schedule and something happens and someone turns to me and says, okay, what do we do now? And everything's upside down and I didn't anticipate that. The anxiety that that causes in me is enough motivation for me to really overly analyze every possible scenario. But I think it also really helps to work with a team of people that communicates and that is on the same page. That is crucial. And I'm grateful to have a team like that, where we can sort of iron out all of the details and be upfront about what we need, what we expect, and how we're going to problem solve if things do go wrong.
Yeah, totally. So jumping off of this idea of team, I'm actually going to go back to something you mentioned earlier about using mm-hmm. LinkedIn to kind of do your job search.
Yes.
And that's LinkedIn, in most of my experience, and I've talked to most musicians I've talked to, is really not a space where a lot of us go to kind of find opportunities. So I'm curious about what your experience was like on there, and maybe more broadly. Was that a big part of your networking tool set, and kind of how you think about that networking in general?
Mm-hmm. I love this question. I love talking about networking because I have very strong feelings about it. So to answer your question about LinkedIn, the only reason I actually have a LinkedIn is because for my minor in college, I was required to get one. And I haven't gotten rid of it. I do use it. I should probably mention that. It has become very useful. But I don't think if I was required to, as an artist, I would have gotten one. I don't think
so. So just to clarify, you're saying something that you were required in school became useful later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That does in fact happen occasionally. And LinkedIn is a good example of that. But as far as networking goes, I feel the way that networking was presented to me, I've always had a problem with. And it was throughout classes, throughout lectures, talks with guest speakers in class, talks with teachers one-on-one. It's always been presented to me in a way that I feel like everyone knows we're all trying to use each other, but it's masked with this veil of feigned interest in what everyone else is doing. And it's just, it seems very fake to me. And I hate the approach of, right, transactional. And maybe in other fields, that makes more sense and that's more applicable. But in my experience in the arts, it's not. It's very much not transactional. There's so much more depth to it than that. And so it's always bothered me that I feel like I've been trained and in being taught about networking, being taught how to talk, how to schmooze, how to make someone think that you're really interested in what they're doing. And I've always wondered, like, why not just be interested in what they're doing? And so something that I've learned along the way throughout the many conversations I've had, mostly about career paths and career choices, is that everyone has had a similar experience. Not necessarily the same experience, but we all have, at least within the arts, we all have experiences that we can connect on and that we can learn from. And so I like to go into interactions with people expecting that I will be able to learn something from them.
Do you do any social media management for Death of Classical?
And a bit.
I'm kind of curious about, like, what has been, how do you feel like the role of social media plays into just that kind of audience and relationship management that you do as the organization? And I mean, that kind of goes back to this word of mouth thing about mm-hmm. Social media being kind of, especially right now in this pandemic time when we can't, you know, interact face to face, there's this element of using social media to kind of replace some of that word of mouth recommendation. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious about what, how social media plays into your role and how you use it and how you think about it. Because I know that a lot of people feel like it has to be, particularly when they're managing like a personal professional account, an artist account, it has to have a certain level of professionalism to be okay to share, mm-hmm. or it has to have a certain amount of posts to be okay to share. And I know that there are best practices around that, but I'm kind of just mm-hmm. curious to hear what your thoughts are about it as someone who has to do that as part of their position.
Mm-hmm. I think in the last, 8 months or so, I think social media has completely changed. Especially for arts organizations, as you said, like, we can't do that face-to-face word of mouth communication connection anymore. And that's something that we at Death of Classical have had so many conversations about, to figure out how are we going to change our networking, to use a word that I don't love. But how are we going to approach that and handle that? And I'm really lucky to have the guidance of our general and artistic director, Andrew Owsley. He also owns and runs his own PR and marketing firm. So he is well versed. Yeah, he knows exactly how to promote things. And I'm very grateful to have that sort of educated guide into how to do this. And I don't feel like I'm doing this on my own. But as far as social media goes, I think our organization is lucky in that we've already sort of thrown tradition out the window with our whole mission. So I don't feel that we have to walk this fine line of making sure that we are catchy enough, but still maintaining that professionalism and interesting, but still having that level of perfection. I think that we can be much more down to earth and intentionally down to earth in a way that I don't see from a lot of other arts organizations, because we're not concerned about how the traditional classical music world will see our image, because we're doing things that are so different from that. So I guess going forward in our approach to social media, we love connecting with the artists that we've worked with and seeing what other people are working on. And I think that's one of the coolest things is how artists have transformed their own social media and their own approach to what they're presenting and what work of theirs they're promoting, because it's really cool for us to see how, you know, a dancer that we've worked with is now capturing what they're doing in quarantine on their iPhone and then uploading it to Instagram. It's just really, really interesting to see how capturing art has changed, and therefore the production of it has changed.
Totally. I wanted to, you brought up your boss, for lack of a better word. And I'm curious about if there are, including him, of course, but if there are other mentors that you think of as being important. Because I know for me and for a lot of people, especially as they're getting out of school, having some mentor relationships can be a really helpful place to kind of touch in with. And I'm wondering if there's any other, including him if you want, relationships that have felt like important touchstones that you want to talk about and describe. And
yeah. I think the most impactful mentor that I've ever had was my first ever cello teacher when I started studying with him in fourth grade. He went by Mr. P. His name is Viktoros Prisgintas. And he completely shaped my outlook and my appreciation for music from an age when I was unable to recognize what exactly he was doing. And I think that's part of why it stuck so much. He's by far one of the most passionate people I've ever met. And his teaching style worked for me in a way that I don't think it worked for a lot of students. He had a reputation for pushing his students and challenging them and pushing them farther and harder to get to the point when they said, okay, I can't do anymore, and then push them beyond that. For me, that just happened to work. And that's sort of where I got this drive to do non-traditional things. He was my cello teacher throughout middle school and elementary school. And I also played in his youth orchestra until I graduated high school and went to college. And in his youth orchestra, we played on the Appalachian Trail, like in the dirt when I had my end pin slipping into mud. We would play at shopping centers. We played at outdoor sculpture gardens. We played under an abandoned train trestle. I mean, he instilled this idea that art belongs everywhere and art exists everywhere. And there's no rhyme or reason as to why it should be limited to concert halls or traditional conventional venues. And so growing up with that idea, it was very jarring for me when I got to college and I realized that not everyone had a Mr. P and not everyone had that exposure to this is art. It belongs in the world. It doesn't belong locked up in a concert hall or in a tiny little space. So that's, I guess, where my desire to do something new and different is rooted. And although I was very young, everything that he taught me has stuck with me and been very profound. And it's fun every time I realize, oh, I'm doing this because Mr. P taught me how to do this 13 years ago or wow. Something like that. So yeah, I credit him for a lot of my drive and a lot of my determination to break down what I perceive to be boundaries of classical music.
To kind of draw us down to the end here, I'm curious to know, do you have any advice for current Peabody students? You can gear that to a specific set or even make it pretty general.
So in a general way, I would say find your people in the world. Find the people that share your drive, that share your interests, and never stop having conversations and asking questions to people that you don't necessarily think will benefit you, or will lead you to an opportunity. I think some of the most meaningful conversations I've had have just been hanging out with friends on a Friday night when the last thing we want to do is talk about music, because that's all we talk about every day of the week. But then we talk about music and we realize there's so much left to talk about that we don't cover in academics and in our classes and in orchestra rehearsals. And I've made so many connections with other artists that way, just asking them about their personal experiences. And the biggest thing is, if anyone ever tells you that you can't do it, don't believe them, because you can. That's, if I had ever given up that idea and that drive to do something that people were telling me I couldn't do, I probably wouldn't have this job, because I would have stopped looking. And it's tremendous to find how many different people there are in the world and how many different ideas they have just within the arts. And I think there's so much that can change, and there's so much progress and forward motion, but that doesn't happen without people that are still looking for it and still searching and trying to make it happen.
Right. That was a great note to end on. Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I will look forward to seeing what else comes out of Death of Classical.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm so happy that I got to share with you.
You can learn more about Olivia's work with Death of Classical on their website, deathofclassical.com, and find a link to the recorded version of To America in the episode notes. Thanks for listening.
Theme music for the MaxQ podcast, created by Dimitro Nebish.